Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your Middle School Science Minute. This is the third in a seven-part podcast series on the book Lifelong Kindergarten, written by Mitchell Resnick. In today's podcast, we'll take a look at Chapter 2, entitled Projects. Mitchell starts the chapter by reflecting back on the inauguration speech from 2009 of Barack Obama. And he said that the most memorable moment for him was when Obama said, "It has been the risk takers, the doers, the makers of things, some celebrated, but more often men and women obscure in their labor, who have carried us up the long, rugged path towards prosperity and freedom." Risk takers, doers, makers of things, Mitchell said, these are the creative thinkers. By using the phrase makers of things, Obama was making an implicit reference to a movement that was just starting to spread through our culture, the maker movement. In 2005, the movement gained momentum when Dale Doherty launched Make magazine, celebrating the joys of building, creating, and inventing things. The following year, in 2006, Dale organized the first Maker Fair, described as a family-friendly festival of invention, creativity, and resourcefulness. Mitchell was attracted to the maker movement for different reasons. He believed that it had the potential to be not just a technological and economic movement, but also a learning movement, providing new ways for people to engage in creative learning experiences. As people make and create, they have opportunities to develop as creative thinkers. After all, create is at the root of creativity. The maker movement encourages people to work on projects, the first of the four P's of creative learning. He reflects on an idea that he had about making a miniature golf course, but he said the general process for making anything, whether it's a miniature golf course or something else, is to start with an initial idea, develop preliminary plans, create a first version, try it out, ask other people to try it out, revise plans based on what happens, and keep doing that over and over. And by working on the project, whether it's a miniature golf course or whatever, a person gains experience with the creative learning spiral. Over the years, many educators and researchers have advocated learning by doing, arguing that people learn best when they are actively involved in doing things, learning through hands-on activities. But in the culture of the maker movement, it's not enough to do something. You need to make something. According to the maker ethic, the most valuable learning experiences come when you're actively engaged in designing, building, or creating something, when you're learning through making. If you want to get a better understanding of the connections between making and learning, and how to support learning through making, there is no better place to look than the work of Seymour Papert, who he was lucky enough, and that's Mitchell, to know Seymour for many years at MIT. Seymour should be considered the patron saint of the maker movement. He earned a PhD in mathematics from Cambridge University in 1959. Seymour moved to Geneva to work with the great Swiss psychologist Jean Piaget. Piaget's constructivist theory of learning was that children are active builders of knowledge, not passive recipients. Children don't get ideas, they make ideas. And in the early 1960s, Seymour moved from Geneva, Switzerland to Cambridge, Massachusetts, to take a faculty position at MIT. Seymour was moving from the epicenter of a revolution in child development to the epicenter of a revolution in computing technology, and he spent the following decades making connections between the two revolutions. Seymour soon emerged as a leader in a spirited intellectual battle over how to introduce computers in education. Most researchers and educators adopted a computer-aided instruction approach. Seymour had a radically different vision. For Seymour, computers were not a replacement for the teacher, but a new medium of expression, a new tool for making things. Seymour's approach built on what he had learned from Piaget, viewing children as active constructors, not passive recipients of knowledge. Seymour went a step further, arguing that children construct knowledge most effectively when they are actively involved in constructing things in the world. That is, when they are makers of things. Seymour called his approach constructivism because it brings together two types of construction. As children construct things in the world, they construct new ideas in their heads, which motivates them to construct new things in the world, and on in a never-ending spiral of learning. Bring these ideas to life, Seymour and his colleagues developed the computer programming language for children called Logo. In his book Mindstorms, Seymour contrasted the computer-aided instruction approach in which the computer is being used to program the child with his own approach in which the child programs the computer. In the process of learning to program, he wrote, a child both acquires a sense of mastery over a piece of the most modern and powerful technology and establishes an intimate contact with some of the deepest ideas from science, from mathematics, and from the art of intellectual model building. Seymour's ideas about learning through making are now starting to gain traction once again, as evidenced by the rise of the maker movement. Although Seymour's work on Logo began more than 50 years ago, and his landmark book, Mindstorms, was published back in 1980, his core ideas are as important and pertinent today as ever before. In the past few years, there's been a surge of interest in learning computer programming or coding. There are now thousands of apps, websites, and workshops to help kids learn to code. But Scratch programming software is part of this trend, but with a distinct difference. Most introductions to coding are based on puzzles. With Scratch, they focus on projects instead of puzzles. When kids are introduced to Scratch, they encourage them to create their own interactive stories, games, and animations. They start with ideas and turn them into projects that they can share with other people. Why the focus on projects? They see coding as a form of fluency and expression, much like writing. When you learn to write, it's not enough to learn spelling, grammar, and punctuation. It's important to learn to tell stories and communicate your ideas. The same is true for coding. Puzzles might be fine for learning the basic grammar and punctuation of coding, but they won't help you learn to express yourself. A project-based approach is the best path to fluency, whether for writing or coding. Most people won't grow up to become professional programmers or computer scientists, but learning to code fluently is valuable for everyone. Becoming fluent, whether with writing or coding, helps you develop your thinking, develop your voice, and develop your identity. He then goes on to talk about Jevor Tully, who co-founded a school called Brightworks. On Mitchell's visit to Brightworks, he was accompanied by several executives from a company that sells educational products. As they left the school, he was excited to discuss the power and possibilities of project-based learning, but he quickly discovered that his fellow visitors had a very different impression of the school. I'm worried that students aren't going to learn the basics, one of them said. Wouldn't it be better if the school focused on the basics first and then let students work on projects after that? These comments reflect a common concern about project-based learning. It's difficult to predict ahead of time exactly what students will learn as they work on projects. The project-based approach is much different. As students work on projects, they encounter concepts in a meaningful context, so the knowledge is embedded in a rich web of associations. As a result, students are better able to access and apply the knowledge in new situations. Even more important, the project-based approach takes a broader view of knowledge. It recognizes that knowledge is not just a collection of concepts. As students work together on projects, they learn not only webs of concepts, but also sets of strategies. Strategies for making things, for solving problems, for communicating ideas. The project-based approach is particularly well-suited for helping students develop as creative thinkers. As students work on projects, they gain an understanding of the creative process. They learn how to iterate through the creative learning spiral, how to start with an initial idea, build prototypes, share with others, run experiments, and revise their ideas based on feedback and experiences. Of all the benefits of the project-based approach, perhaps the most important is the way that projects connect to the learner's interests. And this has been your middle school science minute.